Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there, Broadwasted listeners. It's me, Brian. Just a friendly reminder that Broadwasted is going to be recording live Sunday, April 9th at 1 p.m. as a part of the NYC Podfest. That's at the Bell House in Brooklyn with our special guest, Krista Rodriguez. You can get tickets at nycpodfest.com or check out Broadwasted on Twitter and Instagram for all that information. Tickets are still available, so we're super excited to see you there. And now for your regularly scheduled Broadwasted. Hello, and welcome to the official Broadwasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and...
Mail's here!
What? What a crazy time and place to be getting the mail.
This letter's for you, sir.
Oh, why thank you, generic mailman. Who could this be from? I guess I'll read it as my intro, live on the air. It says, Dear Theodosia, what to say to you? No, wait, sorry, I read that wrong. It says, Dear Friend. Oh, no, sorry, let me put my glasses on. It says, Dear Evan Hansen. That's not my name, but that's fine.
Right, okay.
If I could tell her that it was only us, I would sing no requiem. But I've been waving through a window for forever. Some advice, if I may. You will be found, but it takes time to break in a glove. Some are so big, so small. Anyway, while my words fail, good for you. Sincerely, me. P.S. I'm lost. Does anybody have a map? Well, I don't know who that's from, but I'm just going to make it disappear.
I don't know who that's from either.
Wow.
Moving on.
Oh.
Joining us today are the usual cast-wearing fools, including Kevin Finale Jaeger.
Thank you for giving the last track. I appreciate it.
Or a.k.a. Generic Mailman.
Generic Mailman.
You did a great job.
Yeah, I tried my best. I really...
And our game master and official babysitter of the hour, Kimberly, who's now technically officially Kimberly Schmidt.
Kimberly Schmidt.
Is off on her honeymoon, so it's Brocast Day.
Brocast.
Because with us is an actor who's...
That was me being a bro.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Sausage party.
Exactly.
With us today is an actor whose career spans all mediums. He's a two-time daytime Emmy Award winner.
Do we have to qualify with daytime? Can't we just say it sounds so much better with Emmy?
You know, I wrote it as Emmy winner, and I didn't know how you felt about that.
Yeah, well, now you know.
Yeah, so we have a two-time Emmy Award winner.
There you go. Yes.
For As the World Turns. He's appeared in NBC's Sound of Music and Peter Pan Live and Netflix's House of Cards. A highlight of his theater credits include Hello Carousel.
Hello Carousel.
Hello Again, Carousel, Smokey Joe's, Violet, Little Me, How to Succeed, Cat in a Hot Tin Roof, Tuck Everlasting, The Ellis Island Ragtime, and is currently starring as Larry Murphy in the amazing and important Dear Evan Hansen. Let's give a big Broadwasted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Michael Park.
Thank Michael Park.
You guys.
Yes.
This is great.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Anytime.
Cheers.
I don't need an excuse to drink a beer.
Right?
So I guess that brings us right into, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Guinness draft.
Me too.
I'm drinking a Blue Moon, a big one.
A big one.
I wanted to call it. Can it be called a draft if it's in a bottle?
Well, there were two at the store. The first six-pack you can get was the cans. No, they had the bottles, but it said extra stout.
Oh.
And then there were the
Who
ones.
Who wants extra stout?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I want
right?
the regular really amount it? Of Dublin-infused stout.
Well, I'm drinking Blue Moon so people can hear how I feel about stout.
I love a wheat beer, too, though. If I'm not having one of those, I'll have one of those.
Actually, one of my favorite drinks is a Black and Blue. Where you
like a black and tan, but you do exactly
like a snake bite or a dog bite or whatever they're called.
Exactly.
Black and tan.
So you can follow Michael on Twitter and Instagram at Park24Hours. Hours is not spelled out; it's HRS.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So let's just get right into it. Let's just start with, what have you seen this week?
What have you seen this week?
I've seen nothing. I've seen the inside of my eyelids, and I've seen when I'm in a show, it's really rough. I have three kids, you know, so I have not.
So you've
I'm
seen
so
your kids.
Boring.
So you've seen this week.
Yeah, my son's home from Northeastern for spring break.
Mm-hmm.
He chose to grace us with his presence, the cellar dweller that he is. And so I've seen my son.
Is he doing theater as well?
No, he is an accountant/finance major at at
you did
Rocky
good.
Yeah, right? I think, yeah. Point for me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and my daughter, Kathleen, took her SATs today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Congrats.
Possibly. And then... And
fingers
then
crossed.
My little, I found out, this is what I found out this week, guys.
Sure.
My 12-year-old has a boyfriend.
Whoa.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, my 12-year-old Annabelle mm-hmm. has a boy, and she's not going to listen to this podcast, so it doesn't matter. I found out she has a bit of a boyfriend, which I'm, I don't, I'm,
this, this, I, how do you uncover that?
I have mixed feelings about that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
How do you
imagine.
Uncover it? And
my,
what are your mixed feelings?
My wife and middle daughter, figured it out. And
the wife always knows. Mom always knows. Yep.
So my daughter Kathleen went to the mall where they were all meeting. These 12-year-olds were all meeting because they had a day off on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That's if you care, superintendent days. You know. Remember those?
Yeah.
Those were like bonus winter days. They were kind of awesome. Awesome. So yeah, that's how Kathleen discovered it. Mm. She was there to hang out with.
Said boyfriend.
The other side of the track boyfriend.
Whoa.
Oh,
I know. Where dancing is illegal.
Yeah, man.
Sounds familiar.
No. But I'm going to pony wherever I want in this country.
Pony it out. That'll be our revolution. Just the pony revolution.
Cam Adams said, when in doubt, pony out.
Pony it out. Yeah.
Right. So have you ever seen Phantom of the Opera?
Okay, guys. This is really cool.
Yeah.
I might blow your minds.
Go for it.
When I was a senior, going into my senior year, my mother and father, my family trip up to Toronto, I saw Combe Wilkinson.
Whoa.
Yes, as the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera. And I had just discovered this as I was going through old playbills.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. I didn't realize that I was watching Combe Wilkinson. Wow. But I kind of did because it was so inspiring that that's kind of one of the things that made
that's
me
so
want to
cool.
do this, right?
Yeah. The reason I bring that up is because Kevin and I finally saw Phantom for the first time ever last week.
We did.
With Jim Barber as the Phantom.
Yes.
Yes.
I freaked out about that. I love me some Jim Barber. Like Assassins, Jane Eyre even. I love the Jane Eyre cast album.
I have a great Jim Barber kind of timeline story.
Go for it. I love this.
Does that makes sense to you?
Yep.
So I was I don't know how it goes, and I'm going to try my best to remember this because I'm old, people.
You're just broad-waisted. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Old. You saw Combe Wilkinson do the Phantom.
I did. Yeah. I remember that.
That's super cool.
And I have proof.
Yeah.
So
yeah, most
that's really important. Or does it matter anymore?
Not really.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So I was leaving Hello Again. Yes, I was leaving Hello Again, and I was auditioning for Shenandoah that was being done at Goodspeed. I'm looking down so I don't screw this up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
podcast. You're good.
Right, thank you. You can't see me, but I am. So I was auditioning for Shenandoah. Jim Barber was auditioning as well. It came down to the two of us. I think Marcus Lovett was doing the same thing. So it came down to the three of us. Jim Barber got the job. The whole time, all of us were still continuing to audition for Billy Bigelow, like the replacement Billy Bigelow.
Oh,
Broadway. Do you guys remember? They had that big old thing where they had to shut down for like a week because they didn't have a replacement or an understudy for Michael Hayden at that time. I'm trying to make this as long as possible, the story.
I love it.
Well, that's our time. Thanks for joining us.
I'm auditioning for Shenandoah. Barber is doing the same thing. Barber gets it.
Okay.
Barber is leaving his show Milk and Honey. It was done under a supermarket somewhere. American Jewish Theater is exactly where it was.
Cool.
So he was leaving Milk and Honey, and I ended up getting his replacement in Milk and Honey.
Mm-hmm.
So I go into Milk and Honey. A week later, Barber ends up getting the understudy for Carousel. So he's like, hey, our agents are on the phone with each other, with the casting agents, and I don't know who was casting at the time, but it worked out that Jim was going to come back to his role at Milk and Honey, and I was going to go out to – I was the second for Shenandoah. I was going to go out to Shenandoah, finish that run, which had just started. So actually, I was the guy, okay?
Right.
And after the run, which is only another week long, Milk and Honey, to go into his rehearsals for Carousel. So he goes into Carousel. The whole time, I'm auditioning now again for Carousel to understudy him. at when we leave Shenandoah, I land the job to go understudy him in Carousel. I have no place to stay. I'm calling Jim saying, dude, I have no idea what's going on, but we're following each other everywhere. Well, I'm following you. Everywhere. But I have no place. I don't have a place in the city yet because I've just been doing these regional theater gigs and I've been living in Jersey. He ends up, he says, you know what? I'm moving out of my apartment. Why don't you take over my lease?
Right? So you took over his contract, right? And his lease.
I took over his and the lease. So I was living in his apartment for about a year and a half, 2 years. My son was born. I remember bringing my son back to that apartment, a four-floor walk-up on 100th and Broadway.
James Barber.
So see, that was a long story, but you guys laughed.
I did. So that was a good punchline. Some good payoffs there.
Good stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, he's an incredible phantom, by the way.
His voice
is beautiful.
Yeah.
He really is the voice of the angel of music.
And Kevin and I won the lottery.
We did.
We got front row. We sat next to a lovely couple from Utah who also won the lottery. It was their 1 year anniversary.
Front row.
Yeah.
So you guys weren't asphyxiated by the smoke.
No, but Kevin awkwardly started to go into the auction at the beginning.
I did. I started trying to bid, and I didn't know.
But I'd never seen it before. It was just one of those things where I grew up around here, so it was just like, I was always going to be there, so like, I'll see it eventually. And then I realized that even more than seeing it for the first time, that was my first time ever in the Majestic. Because why would I have been there before? Because I didn't see it.
It's just been Phantom.
Because for my lifetime, it's always been Phantom.
I don't think I've ever seen it here. Now, I was on tour with Ken Hill's Phantom of the Opera. That's a dramatic pause. Ken Hill's Phantom of the Opera, which I was on what they called Proof That You Can Kill What's Already Dead tour. I played Raoul.
I've seen
for
one
nine
of those.
Months. Yeah, it's heavy. I played Raoul for 9 months, and it changed my life in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
good and bad.
Yeah,
but it really started out. It made me realize I can probably do this for a living. I think I got the longevity of sustaining whatever instruments that I bring to any show. I can do this. It's great. And deal with the traveling and everything. It did ruin my personal life in a way, but everything worked out in the end.
Yeah.
But he was the original. If you look it up, Ken Hill, I believe, was the first one to write a musical based on Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Lloyd Webber's whole story is that he actually saw a version of the Phantom of the Opera.
I would say that this would
it
be
might it. Have been that one.
It was this
and
one.
And then he decided to write his own.
And after we started, almost every single show we would start and people would slowly realize, oh, this isn't. This is from my soundtrack.
Are they going to sing? Think of
They're
me.
Not. This is not it. And then you'd see people halfway through the first act just start getting up and walking. Yeah. I'm like, oh, boy.
Well, I have to say one of the things about seeing Phantom of the Opera with Brian, because I actually had seen it when I was 10 years old on the tour. I saw it in Cincinnati, Ohio. My grandma took me. So I'd seen it before, but I'd never seen it on the Broadway, and I feel like it's a very different experience to see it on a tour when you're 10 and then the Broadway when you're an adult.
Yeah.
And so...
the Great White Way.
The Great White Way. But one of the things that I went into it with some trepidations that because it's been on so long, am I going to be wowed by some of the things that happened in the show? But I feel like I was because of the feeling in the theater. There were so many people there. The couple next to us were such... It was packed. Completely full.
There's a reason it's been running for 30-plus years.
And the couple who were sitting next to us, the entire theater was filled with people who, this was their dream to come to New York to see Phantom on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just this room full of people who were just, living for the show, and it was palpable. And I think that helped the experience.
Well, we were right next door doing Tuck Everlasting, and they had lines. We're waiting to get in, and we did not. So you saw the effect. You saw people standing in front of the poster right there on the street taking photos.
But do they have a dream ballet? No, they do not.
They don't have a dream. They have masquerade, which is...
They do.
With mannequins.
It's beautiful.
It's very beautiful. From the front row, you see the mannequins pretty clearly, but, I mean, it's not a surprise. It's in the books, they talk about it.
So why are they using mannequins now? Are they, they're cutting back on...
I think they've always have to just
They
throw
always
up that staircase.
Have, just to make the staircase completely full.
When I saw it in Toronto, I was in the balcony.
But, I was totally... First of all, Ali Ebwalt, who is Christine right now for, she's the lead Christine... Because the alternate goes on because of Sarah, what's her name's contract?
Sarah Brightman's contract,
But she was fantastic. It felt, there are times when you go see shows and that have been on forever. And, like, there's a feeling that you get from the energy of the stage that, like, they're ready to go home halfway through.
Right.
And, like, I can honestly say that, especially sitting in the front row, everybody was giving it.
Well,
and
it was amazing.
So, not, like, so many people were making their debut in a show that's been running for 30 years, and that's just, like, so cool. Cool. Let's go straight into a game.
Yes!
Let's play a game.
What game do we have?
Okay, so I'm taking over the game master duties this week since Kimberly's not here. Okay, so I've been listening to the Dear Evan Hansen soundtrack kind of a lot.
Good.
And one of the things that I've noticed on your song, one of your songs, To Break in a Glove, is that it contains recorded dialogue. And I was thinking to myself, there's a lot of musical theater cast albums that also contain dialogue.
Yeah.
So that inspired a game that we're going to play called To Speak in a Song. And basically how it's going to work is I'm going to read out dialogue from a well-known cast album.
Jesus,
and you
fair.
Two are going to try to yell out first who what
I'm
cast
so
album
bad
it's from.
You are going to win.
No, I'm not.
You're going to fake losing
to make me feel better.
I think every single soundtrack I'm on, any kind of soundtrack, I'm speaking on the soundtrack.
I try not to use yours.
Well, that you should have to tell <Yeah. laughs>
So, okay. Right. So, and I'm going to do my best impressions of how it actually sounds on the cast album.
This will be great.
To help you.
All right. Okay.
All right. So here's the first one. Run to your work. Hide behind your painting. I've come to tell you I am leaving because I thought you might care to know
Sunday in the
how
park
foolish
with
of me because you care about nothing. Correct. Sunday in the Park with George. So he gets one
Well,
point.
That was obvious, right?
Yeah. He said so, painting, yeah. And then you just got the Sunday up.
But why didn't you do it? Why didn't you say it?
Because you got this out first.
Oh, did I? You were very polite. Thank you.
All right. So the second one. General.
Sunday in the park.
We have an intruder. He walked right into the camp.
The camp?
Les Mis?
Miss Saigon?
Oh. I believe that Satan has a hold of
Book
you.
Book of Mormon?
There you go. No,
what a weird line to use.
All right.
It's from like the big number of Act 1.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
It's going well.
Number three. Truly it touched me, it did, that you would think of me as a friend. Of course, I was saddened to hear that your exams came off rather less than you had hoped, and that you will not be promoted come fall. And yet, I must say straight away that fleeing to America is hardly the solution.
No.
And even if it were, I cannot provide the money you request.
Go back to the exams part. can you use that in a sentence, please?
And that you will not be promoted come fall. And yet, I must say straight away that fleeing to America is hardly the solution.
All right, time? I don't know.
Spring
I know
Awakening.
Nothing. Oh, yeah, that's it.
These are shows, listen, these are shows I have not seen.
That's fair.
Because I have children.
You have children, and you're in stuff. So, like, it's not that you can, like, randomly go on a Tuesday night.
Right.
Because you're on a Tuesday night.
Hello.
Yeah. Again.
This is going well.
Great.
I told you I'm terrible at these.
Here's the next one. Okay, stop. Kathy, stop. Listen to me. Can we please...
Oh, that's...
Could we just have 2 minutes where we don't contradict everything?
The last 5 years.
There you go.
I just knew from Kathy.
I know. Here, this is another one for Brian. Here you go.
Kathy,
there
just
is
for me.
Either the wisest madman or the maddest wise man
in
the world.
Oh, that's Mandela Mancha. That
there
one
you
I know.
Go.
That's my favorite.
Is it?
Yeah.
Did you say anything else? About you? Never mind, I don't really care anyways. No. He just said so many he said so many things. I'm just trying to remember the best ones.
That's Dear Evan Hansen that you have not seen.
I saw it for both of us.
You saw it twice.
Very good.
So you got Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah, do
one.
More things I know. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. That's what I'm talking about.
Hamilton.
That's the one you used to
Do I get a point for that? Because you just went into the whole thing.
I just started going. I kept
I loved it.
Yeah.
This one's in honor of Kimberly. Jesus, Mary, after all these years, you're still in love with the guy. You got to help save me then, Charlie.
No, wait a minute.
What?
I know this. Jesus, Mary, after all these years, you're still in love with the guy.
So you gotta help save me then, Charlie.
Oh, jeez.
Charlie, why can't it be like it was? I want it the way that it was. No. Merrily we roll.
Wow. I was gonna say company.
You did it forward, so I didn't understand.
All right, we only got a couple more. You guys are doing fantastic. This is what I have of you. You ordering me to sweep and dust the parlor. You
Les Mis?
Steaming off the wallpaper. you in front of a classroom of bored students.
I know this too.
Digging up a dogwood tree. You working on the house, smelling like sawdust and sweat and designer cologne.
Little shop?
No, it's
you
so great.
You standing on the shoulder of Route 50, bracing yourself against the pulse of the trucks rushing past.
Hands on a hard body.
I don't know.
I guess I'm the one who obsesses over cast albums.
What is
Fun Home?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Damn. Oh, God, and these three were the ones that were going to be a little harder. So yeah, right. Here
Maybe
we go.
Know them. You don't know what we
I
know.
Don't. I'm telling you right now, I don't know them.
Oh, my goodness, Gould, is this on the bill? It's one of my favorites, Edie, Please. It's the very first song you ever taught me. Oh, we used to sing it together. No one?
No one. No. Company.
Grey Gardens?
Oh, yeah, of course.
September 1st, 1989. Dear Diary, I believe I'm a good person, you know. I think there's good in everyone, but here we are, the first day of senior year. I look around at all these kids I've known all my life, and I ask myself, what happened?
Do patent leather shoes really reflect up? I'm going with high school shows. 13.
Yeah. Spelling Bee.
Heather's the Musical. Heather.
Kevin.
And this was the bonus one, which no one's going to get.
Lay on us. Maybe we'll surprise you.
All right. This is my best Italian
accent.
If you
tuned out to this podcast,
Bridges of Madison County.
In 5 minutes.
It is.
Because you said Italian accent, and that's the only thing that I know.
There you go. I think you won.
I think you just won.
I think we both lost.
It was the most great. So that was To Speak in a Song.
Great. Good job, Kevin. There's a reason Kimberly's the game master.
Yay!
However, we'll play another one that hopefully is a little bit easier than that. However,
I have other games.
So, a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
What's your favorite musical?
Oh, my favorite, Sweeney Todd.
It is?
Yeah, in Company. I mean, they're just, those are, to me, perfect. They're almost perfect. Sweeney Todd is just, it's
Sweeney Todd is amazing.
It's beautiful and scary and
have
dark.
Have you done that show?
There's light in it. No. No. I would love to.
Do you have bucket list shows?
You know, I...
Or do you prefer something like Larry because you created the character?
I don't know how to answer that, only because I've kind of just gone where the wind blows me, really. I'm too old to be playing some of them now. Bobby was a bucket list thing for the longest time, and I feel like I've knocked off
in buckets.
There you go. I think I've
yeah.
Pretty soon I'll be kicking them. But you know, I like to feel that in some times I've done some roles that are other people's bucket lists. You know, like mm-hmm. Monty and Violet. I've kind of been blessed to hashtag blessed to have done so many great shows, yeah. And to have been a part of, I should say, yeah. So many really smart, intelligent shows.
And you were a part of the first, like, New York production of Violet, correct?
I was, yes.
What was that like working with a show that was so kind of different than what a lot of shows happening at that time when that was coming out?
I don't know what that means, because it was one of those things. I moved to New York, right, and I jumped in. My first audition for an Equity musical was Hello Again. That was my first audition.
So you booked College Boy right away.
Right away. And that was probably after I got back from that Ken Hills Phantom of the Opera tour. And I was out of work for like a month wondering, okay, I'm going to go back home. Sooner or later, I'll just run out of whatever money I saved and go back home and it'll be fine. And then this audition came up. So I landed that, which was great. Didn't really know that I had stepped in something that was really, again, going to change the course or the trajectory of my career. And it did. It was wonderful. I picked up an agent, and it was kind of great. And then it was that whole Shenandoah thing, right, that we talked about, and Carousel. So I was sitting in New York with Carousel for a while, and during Carousel, I landed Smokey Joe's. I was working. And so landing Violet, I didn't really know what was happening there. Yeah. I'd done the workshop, and Janine Tesori and Brian Darcy James played the school the bus driver.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool. We were all young. We were all kind of living it, and none of us had really busted out yet. And so we didn't really know. We didn't really know what was happening.
That's so cool.
And I didn't have anything to, compare it to besides, this is kind of like, with the Michael John Lacusa stuff, it was kind of like Sondheim. And then you have Janine's amazing work with Brian's, and it was, the storytelling was really great. So, no, I had nothing to compare it to. I had nothing to compare
it
to.
So it was just everything was like a cool new experience.
Everything was a cool new experience, right.
That's awesome.
Skip forward, Dear Evan Hansen now. You did the... You did the DC, and then you did. You came to do Tuck, and then you now. So you did. You did correct. Not do the second stage.
Correct? I didn't do second stage, but I was able. I was the only. I'm the only one from this cast who's seen the show.
Oh, true.
Because I went to the opening of the second stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was bawling. I was sitting next to one of Mike Feist's friends, and I'm just like, kind of mouthing along, trying my hardest not to sing along, trying my hardest not to go. What the. Did they do to that scene? And be all angry. And then I realized, oh, it's, you know what? Larry could have three more scenes, and Cynthia could have seven, and Rachel could have another song, and it wouldn't detract from the fact that this kid's story is the focus and should be, and the trajectory of Evan is not going to change, regardless of what we do.
Right.
And at the same time, the feeling of the Larry and the Cynthia stories on the stage with them, and he's just diving deeper and deeper into this hole that he can't get out of.
Yeah.
So it was very informative to sit there and watch the show and the projections. But the projections they tell a story. That Good For You scene is a music video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I saw it twice. The first time I saw it in the front row.
You tweeted about that.
Oh yeah. So. What was interesting about that was the first time I saw it. So it was very much an experience where we were right there with the actor specifically, and I could see only the upright projections. Then I saw it from the front of the mezz.
Which is the perfect place to see the show.
And I had no idea about the floor projections, which totally changed my my understanding of the concept of the show, where they're all standing. I think I mentioned this once, but they're all standing in, like, their chat boxes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, that just didn't – I knew that they were chatting and not talking to each other directly, but it illuminated so much more.
Those chat boxes, it's so smart. It's so incredibly smart. And then the Good For You boxes are the same way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just – I don't get to sit in any of those because I don't know, I'm not in those scenes, but they really did frame the show so well, and the attention of the audience is framed so well because of them.
So we could talk about certain performances in that show all day long.
Yeah, I agree.
And watching Ben work is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's great. But I can't believe he's like his work ethic is ridiculous, too. Yeah. I mean, the kid he's got steel cords.
Yeah. But what struck me, especially the second time I saw it, kind of already having known the plot and kind of point A to point B, was kind of something you touched on earlier, in that every character really does have a journey in that. Mm-hmm. And the nuances of the Larry character and Cynthia and, you know, the other mom and Laura Dreyfuss and all those characters – you know, you really create that world with such a limited, you know, set and cast. So I guess talk a little bit about what went into making sure that everything felt alive from your perspective.
I was talking to somebody and said, there's so many gaps in so many long gaps between in your story that you have to kind of come back and fill in. I said, I don't feel like I have to fill in a thing because I think the thing is written so perfectly. When you have that kind of material to work in, you don't feel like you're working that hard to fill in the space that you've been missed on the stage for what it seems like maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Sorry, the Guinness just kicked in. What was the question?
Essentially, like, what went into, you know, we'll take a specific, your song, the To Break in a Glove.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, there's a ton of subtext within that sequence,
yes,
as well as in that song in general.
Yeah.
Kind of what went into you crafting those moments?
You know, it was really cool. So I didn't, when I was at the first read, right?
Yeah.
It was Ben and Rachel and Jennifer and myself at the very first table read for the show, and Justin Paul playing the piano like it's a drum set,
Oscar
shaking. Oscar winner, Golden Globe
winner. Yeah.
Justin and Benj.
Yeah.
So when they're and Benj is singing like an angel. He's got a voice of an angel. Mm-hmm. So the two of those two were singing all the songs while we were reading the script, and it was just absolutely blew me away. Then I was wondering, sitting there, okay, what's going to happen with this character? Mm-hmm. It gets to the Breaking a Glove song, and immediately I'm taken back to when I was a 12-year-old, and my dad is so mad at me because I lost my glove, and I can't find it anywhere, and I found it in the bushes, and he's like, good thing you did, Michael, because that's the only glove you're ever going to own. Yeah. And I said, well, that's right. And I said, but it's all stiff. He goes, come here. And he takes it, and he's got olive oil, and he's rubbing this whole thing in, and so I am now completely emotional just reading the thing. Mm-hmm. And or I'm not even singing it.
Right.
Those guys are singing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing the interjections as well. So watching them and realizing that, all right, how do I make this, instead of a Michael moment, I make this an Evan moment. The next reading we did, I was in the shower. I don't know why.
During the reading.
it was a very wet spring. I'm in the shower going, how can I make this stand out a little bit? And it just popped. Something happened. And it was, I married, you're going to make it a euphemism.
Yeah, it popped in the shower. Popped,
damn it. It was there and he took it. Did you hear it? He took it.
He never leaves those ones go.
No, but I was able to marry the dialogue and the lyrics together in a way that was, I didn't let any air kind of infiltrate, and I just kind of went from spoken to sung. And with Ben standing right there, we kind of discovered this thing together. I was very proud of that, and I think that's what won me, knock on, you know, I believe that's what won me the role. Mm-hmm. For the future, because I also think that Stacey Mindich also talks about, our producer Stacey Mindich talks about that her husband really, really enjoyed that. That one particular moment really touched him. So it does a lot of men in the audience, I believe.
Yeah. I remember I have a similar story. You know, it's that time in a tradition where, like, I started Little League, and my dad taught me how to, with the rubber bands, and he put the ball in, and like, that's a very vivid memory of mine. So that song,
and my son, it almost ruined my relationship with my son, me coaching his Little League team. That's why I have pictures of my son everywhere in my dressing room, because it could have easily been a moment. I'm not going to say it could have easily been a Connor moment, but it could have easily been one of those moments that ripped us apart that we could never kind of mend. So I that song means a lot to me.
I guess we'll go a little.
I'm sorry. This is supposed to be a fun podcast.
No, this is really
turning into an NPR kind of thing.
No, I loved it.
Tell me more about. No. I guess also one of the things that interests me about the show, especially from the Murphy family's perspective, is the concept of who Connor was and who he is created as. The idea that, like, he was this person living a full life, and then, you know, he's, from the audience's perspective, we never get to know him, so he's kind of a created character.
Yeah,
in a way.
Great. He's what's great. Mike Feist gets a great character to play too, because he gets to play Connor, who is completely distraught and unstable, we'll say. And we don't really get to know him at all. You're correct about that. And then he becomes the imagination of, I don't want to spoil anything, but he becomes two characters, two other characters. Mm-hmm. He becomes the imagination of Evan. Mm-hmm. Or this imaginary, this imagined character of Evan, because Evan didn't know him,
right.
And then he becomes the imagined character of Jared.
Yes,
in the beginning of the second act, and Jared didn't know him either.
Yeah,
so it's kind of cool. So the answer is, no one knows who this counter character is. Mm-hmm. What you see is someone who's super troubled, right? And when you see it, you'll see.
I will.
From the audience's perspective, or from you, like, having the audience right there every night. What's the craziest audience experience you've ever had? And two, what's it like at the end of Evan Hansen when, like, everyone's basically sniffling?
The craziest thing that ever went down was during Little Me. Martin Short plays like 9 characters in the show. I don't know if you know the show Little Me. Thank you for not – you didn't read anything from Little Me when we were playing that game.
I'm sorry.
So that's cool, man. That's cool. And a lady in the audience stands up and says – my husband's having a heart attack. Somebody help me. And we immediately, obviously, stop the show. Lights go on. Is there a doctor in the house? Boom, boom, boom. The ambulance. The whole time, we're wondering what the hell we're going to do. And ambulance comes. They're dealing with stuff. Marty, afterwards, the guy is carted away in an ambulance, and Marty decides, well, we can't just pick up. So I'm going to do a little stand-up. And he goes out and does some stand-up, and I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away.
Wow.
It was so intense and scary, and everyone in the audience, no one knew what to do. No. No one knew how to react.
Right.
And Marty says, well, I'll get us back. Hold on. I mean, it's a super, super funny show.
Right.
And he goes out there, tells some jokes, to get everybody back into it. I believe the person lived, which is nice to know.
Always nice.
A week later, same thing happens. I said, Marty, you are knocking them dead, literally.
Wow.
It happened twice.
Twice in a month. That's
twice.
Back to weeks.
That's actually crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. I'm not telling a lie here, I believe.
No.
I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this right.
Yeah.
And you can probably corroborate this with Todd Hames, probably.
Okay.
I mean, it was the weirdest deal. I don't know if it was the same week or, like, the next
were
week.
Were you on stage when both these screens happened?
I might have been once. I might have been on one. Yes. That one. My husband's having a heart attack. Brooks Ashmanskas was in the show. It was a funny show.
Yeah.
We had Brooks, a young 24-year-old Brooks.
Yeah, we just saw him in Candide.
McGraw.
Yeah.
And Marty Shore.
Wow.
Just stupid. Just stupid. So that was the craziest thing.
Yeah.
How do you, at the end of the show, you hope that the message got across to the younger people who are there to see Ben Platt and to see and to comment on how beautiful Mike Feist is. And I know that Mike Feist is he's beautiful, but he's a very serious actor, and he hopes that people see through the fact that he's just a good looking guy too, and seeing the pain he was going through in the beginning, the path that he goes on, his character goes on to help heal everyone around him as well, and they see through some of the jokes that Jared, they thank God for. The wonderful Will Roland,
who brings
us levity to the show.
Absolutely.
So, and you're hoping that they see through that to get to experience what the parents are going through.
Yeah.
And I think they do. I hope they do. Yeah. And I think they do. So I have faith that they do.
Well, when I saw it twice, everyone around me felt that way. How about you, Kevin?
I hate you so much.
Damn it.
Hamilton all over again.
Wearing that... Florida State hat.
Yeah, Seminole Pride.
Yeah, whatever.
My publicist, Lisa Goldberg.
Oh, yeah.
Florida State.
Seminole fans, yes.
My friend Kevin Covert.
Seminole Nation, bro. It's real.
It's real.
Go Bombers, Ithaca College.
Oh, Ithaca College. Yeah. We'll scalp you. We're the Noles.
That's fine. We're Division III. Let's play a game.
Let's play a game. My nephew goes to Ithaca, by the way.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
For theater?
My nephew cousin. Yeah, not for theater, no.
The park school?
I have no clue.
Your school?
Yeah. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
No, I appreciate it.
Don't ask me any more questions.
All right, for the next game we're going to play, you actually mentioned the musical already, which is fun. We're going to play Dirty Hands on a Hard Body.
The
way this works is you put both your hands on the table, and we're going to go around and basically play categories where, like, I'll say a category, and we just go around rapid fire and say something that fits in the category, and if you stop or fumble or mess up, you have to put a hand up in the air.
I suck at these games.
It's going to be fun. For this version, every time you lose, you're the one who picks the category.
Okay.
So, like, if you fumble, then you're the one who picks the category.
All right. So our first category to start out is going to be baseball teams.
Oh, the New York Mets.
Yankees.
The Cincinnati Reds.
The Seattle Mariners.
Arizona Diamondbacks.
The Cleveland Indians.
The St. Louis Cardinals.
Chicago Cubs.
The Tampa Bay Rays.
The Miami Marlins.
Oh, motherless whores.
Yeah, they're from Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're a great team.
Yeah.
All right, so you have one hand up, so then you get to pick the category.
Premier League soccer teams.
Chelsea.
Liverpool.
David Beckham.
What team do you support?
Liverpool.
You do?
All right. I do.
I'm actually a QPR fan.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Oh, I know. I lived in South Kent for a while, and we would always go to Loftus Road. And I just, like...
You were saving QPR.
I was. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what QPR means? Kevin?
I don't. I knew what
Queens
PBR is.
Queens Park Rangers.
The Queens Park Rangers. Yeah. Is that New York? Is that that's London, obviously?
I love this game. So much better than what is this line from?
Okay. Throw a shade at my games. It's fine. Okay.
You're up.
Musicals that Michael Park was in. Oh, Tuck Everlasting.
I literally have the list in front
don't
of me.
Don't look at it. So I said Tuck Everlasting.
Hello again.
Bye-bye Birdie in high school.
Dear Evan Hansen.
Violet.
That would be Chicago. In
Carousel.
College.
In college. What'd you say?
Carousel.
How to Succeed.
Funny thing happened to Way to the Forum.
In...
At the JCC.
Gov.
Dear Evan Hansen, off-Broadway.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I wasn't. Loser.
No! You were in Washington. Well, D.C. is off-Broadway.
Well, it's way off.
Put your hand up, Kevin.
So I'm out.
You go again, though. No, but you say the next.
So I say the next category.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, how about the category is college football teams? Good college football teams.
Clemson.
Boise.
Oh, it goes back to me. Alabama.
FSU.
Washington.
LSU.
Okay. USC.
Cornell.
Sure. Penn State.
Yale.
I'll put my hand up for that one.
Well, we are losing. We are losing your Broadway.
I know. All right, so it's 1-1. So you guys are whoever wins this one wins.
Yeah, he's
and I get
win
to
it.
Pick it.
Then you get to pick the category.
You're gonna win it. You guys are picking sports to make me feel good. I like. I appreciate that.
Right. Oh, musicals with sports in them. How's that? Okay. We'll combine the
sure
two.
Sure.
Does it have to be a musical?
Like it can be in play.
Play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. Fine.
Theater experience with sports in it.
Yeah, sure.
Gotcha.
Sure. Great.
I don't know a lot, but this is cool.
I'll start with Damn Yankees.
I was going to start with Damn Yankees. I'm going to have to go with Cat in a Hot Tin Roof.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Take Me Out.
I don't know. Bring It On.
Oh, good one.
That's a good one.
Dear Evan Hansen. Right?
Oh, falsettos. Jason play baseball. Yeah.
Oh, Lisistrata Jones.
I was going to say that one.
Oh, really?
I said Ragtime.
Oh, good
yeah
one.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Isn't there a Top Gun musical with a volleyball scene?
That doesn't count.
Even if that exists, that doesn't count.
Right. I'm gonna Lombardi.
Lombardi. Oh. You win. I've got nothing else.
Oh, you don't have anything else.
But you totally win. I'm giving you the prize.
Wow.
You win all the prizes.
I don't know wow what to do.
You're selfless, Michael Park.
Oh, now I look terrible.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Yeah, one more question before the last game.
Sure.
Okay. What's been your experience with technology in the industry and in the world, kind of having been part of a show that like is much about the technology of today?
You know what's great is because I'm 48, we had beepers and we had to call our agents on a break with a payphone.
Yeah.
Nowadays, music directors and directors have to say, "Hey guys, can we just put our cell phones down for a minute and pay attention?" That to me is remarkable that people have to actually say that.
Yep.
No, is that because people are texting it or because they're using it to record?
It's not because they're using it to record. Some people text during situations. Because I have three kids, and if all of a sudden I'll say, "Oh guys, I'm so sorry. I need to take care of
priorities are priorities." Yeah.
Whereas I'd have to wait and get news. Or my daughters would have to wait to get in touch with me during
until
one
you
of my
had
breaks.
A break,
yeah.
So that's good and bad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's good that I can be in touch with my family and in some kind of crisis mode if I need to. It's terrible because I can be in touch with my family at a drop of a hat,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or that I can be tweeting and not really paying attention to. Now, I'm noticing something terrible about myself, that I'm watching a television show and I'll check at Twitter at the same time and I'll have to rewind the television show because I miss something.
I do that,
too. It's so frightening,
yeah,
isn't it? It's great to use also as a punishment. To take technology away is kind of wonderful. The world is going on around us, and if I take these kids, my kids' world away from them.
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
Yep.
And also, if you want to be on If you want to be texting with your friends, you can text for half an hour, read for half an hour. Mm-hmm. You got to equalize. Same thing with my son when he was playing his, you know, video games down in the basement, cellar dweller. That he will. I said, dude, this is great. Have fun for an hour. You got to equalize for an hour, and he complied, and it was wonderful. Technology of shows. Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah, specifically, Dear Evan Hansen. I mean, the ninth character of our show are Peter Negrini's projections, and it's really they tell a story and they help us tell the story. Let's hope they're not distracting. Let's hope they're not distracting us from the story and from major moments like at the end of Act One, the cathartic moment that Larry and Cynthia have, and even that Laura Dreyfus is having at the end of Act One,
right?
Or what Crystalline is trying to, or Alana. But there's a lot going on, and I don't know if some kids can handle all of the information that they're being thrown.
You mentioned TV shows. What are you watching now?
I am watching Catastrophe on
Amazon. It's so good.
I love them. He's great.
Rob Delaney's amazing.
Yeah. I just got done watching Sneaky Pete, which I really liked.
Oh, yeah.
Sneaky Pete was great. There was something on Netflix I was watching. Oh, Sense8.
Right.
The second season dropped, and I hadn't caught up yet, so I was watching a little bit of that. I love car shows. I'm so addicted to Wheeler Dealers. Yeah. Velocity. It's so stupid. I'm an Anglophile, so I love those two guys, the two Brits, Mike and Ed, and I can't fix a car either, but I just love hearing them talk about it.
I hear you.
Yeah, it's a long bonnet. We need to do what? A motor. It's a sporty motor. You know, they're not talking about the motor. They're talking about the car itself.
That's amazing.
You know, it's kind of great. I just love it all. In the boot. He's got it in the boot. I just love it. There's a lot of rust in your boot.
That's in between the Liverpool games.
Right. So it's really kind of great. I just love all that. I love all that stuff. And I'm okay. The Great English Baking Show. Amazing. Possibly the best show on TV. And
there's something amazing about watching a reality show where they're all in it together.
Yeah,
and where it's all camaraderie and no evil doings, if you will.
No, I love it. Yeah, I love that. I also love Chopped.
Yeah, Chopped is wonderful. Chopped. I love Chopped.
Those are the shows I watch. Love. I'm glad Love is coming back.
Yeah.
I liked Red Oaks too.
Red Oaks is really fun.
I loved Red Oaks. Yeah. Will Roland was in a couple episodes of Red Oaks.
Oh, I should. Let's play a game.
So I'm handing Michael two packs of Lights of Broadway show cards. Have you seen these before?
I'm in a couple.
I know. I'm just making sure. All right, good.
So I have.
So I've actually written a Broadway and Mad Lib for you to read, and it's actually loosely based on the show that you're on or have been on. So this one is called As the Stage Revolves. And it's a Lights of Broadway show card Mad Lib. So you'll just read, and every time it says, like, Lights of Broadway card, you just read whichever card you open.
Have you guys had Squigs on your show?
Yes, yes. Multiple times.
So, yeah, so you'll just jump right in there.
There's so much drama happening inside the walls of Broadway's newest theater, the Oakdale. The entire cast of the new production of Louis J. Stadlin, the musical, is in shock after learning that the lead, Robert Morse, is actually the long-lost swing Bette Midler. This has struck Hello, Dolly. Wait a minute. Does that work? Yes. This has struck Hello, Dolly especially hard. Isn't that something?
That's really funny that came together.
Since they have been lovers and secretly conceived a child together, the endless feud between aging diva Nevin Steinberg
that's amazing
and the ingenious ingenue James Lapine has reached an all-time high that led to a final ultimatum from theater owner Robert Morse again. Finding a way to work together or be blacklisted and never work on stage again. As if this wasn't enough, more drama lurks amongst the backstage crew. We've learned that the mysterious new assistant stage manager is none other than Jen Colella. Escaped from prison and waiting for the perfect moment to seek revenge on falsettos. Perhaps revenge is a dish best served center stage. And moments before the first preview performance, LaShawn's wakes up from a coma and finally reveals who cut the rope holding the spotlight that caused their injury. Who's guilty? Find out next time on As the Stage Revolves.
Yay!
Cheers. Cheers, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you being here with us. We end every episode with a quote.
Yeah.
And today's episode is Flash of Mauve, Splash of Puce, Fool and Gold, Ghoul and Goose, Green and Black, Queen and Priest, Trace of Rouge, Face of Beast, Masquerade from Phantom of the Opera.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
I was like, what the hell is that?
This is the quote from my father.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Swing hard and look up. How about that?
That's good.
That's I like
George Arthur Park Jr.
All right.
And look up.
Swing hard and look up.
My quote from my dad is, what, you made a glass, by the way? No, now I say it to everybody else. I'm just like, I'm trying to watch the Mets, guys. What, you made a glass? Get out of the way.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You guys, are you Mets fans?
I'm a big Mets fan.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that's terrible.
But I grew up in Jersey, so yeah. I'm a Devils fan, so I've seen 3 Stanley Cup wins.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And QBR. Go get them, boys.
Good old QBR.
I don't know. What saying did your dad give you?
Kevin, you're too expensive.
You have a big family, Kevin?
I do. I have 2 sisters and a brother, yeah. And then my 2 parents and... My mom's the oldest of 6 kids, so there's a bunch of people running around.
Yeah.
My dad was an only child, though, so he was obsessed with having a big family.
Huge family. What? Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks,
man. Thank you so much.
Well, we end every episode with our favorite cadence from our favorite musical.
Zoo-doo-wop bump.
Wow.
Thanks, Michael Park.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.